things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah!
That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
You can't have dinner. I need to votes counted.
Oh, we've got a war to start. What are you doing eating dinner?
So, like, what are you wearing to the Civil War? Are we wearing a skirt? Are we wearing pearls?
Are you being cute? Because if you're cute, I need to be cute.
I need to at least put eyeliner on if you're going to put, like, makeup on.
I think I'll do, like, a waterproof mascara so the tear gas doesn't get, like, messy like it did the last time we got tear gas.
Yeah, that was terrible.
That's a lesson that I learned.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely going to wear my Rothy's because they are durable and reliable.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm going to wear my snickety sneakers.
I should probably wear my snickety sneakers. My new ones that I bought.
Yeah, there you go. And put, like, the flats, like, in the back in case we have to, like, negotiate or something. Mm. Like, just toss flats in the trunk so you have them if, like, we, like, go out for a Civil War dinner, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's not funny. But if we don't laugh, we'll cry.
If you don't laugh, you cry. See, might as well make jokes. That's the basis of the podcast.
That's true. It's just too relevant. It hurts too close.
It hurts, but it's a familiar pain.
Familiar pain. We need help.
It's the kind of pain that makes you feel like you're home.
Oh, yeah. I remember that pain.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why, like, this feeling of, like, I don't let myself feel hope, because I'm used to feeling very sad. That is, like, a comfy place for me.
It's familiar.
Yeah.
It's, you know how to manage yourself in that space.
Uh-huh. I know how to manage panic. I know how to manage grief. I know how to manage, like, intense, deep depression. Managing hope is very scary.
It's new. It's fresh. It's unusual. We don't know how to be happy.
Sweat a lot.
We should bring it up in therapy.
Yeah, my therapist, I normally meet her every month.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay, like, when do you want to meet again? And I was like,
next week.
How do you feel about 2 weeks from now? And she was like, yeah, we could do that. And I was like, okay, I know that sooner than we normally do. And she's like, it's okay. There's a lot going on. So.
Who therapies the therapists?
Kevin. Okay. My stepdad. He therapies the therapists.
The therapists need therapy too.
Oh, Kev.
Oh.
We were talking at dinner the other night. I had like a hypothetical question for him that wasn't super hypothetical. I just had a question. And what'd I phrased it so weird.
What'd you say?
I was like, Kevin. Hypothetical question for you.
Ayo, Kev.
And then I was like, so here's the thing, though. These people that I know, this is happening to them. And he was like, yeah, no, that's not okay. And I was like, okay, that's what I thought. I'm going to let him know.
I'm going to let him know this isn't okay. What's going on with them? Who is it?
You know who it is.
Oh.
That thing.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
The thing. And then Claire is like, so I have a friend who's like seeing stuff. And Kevin's like, what do you mean? And she's like he's hallucinating.
Oh.
And Kevin was like, there's a schizophrenia exam that I could like just give him. And I was like, family dinner is weird now.
He's good at those. He's had a couple of those for my fam.
Great. Yeah. My stepdad and Jenny go way back.
It's weird. Strangely.
It's a weird turn of events, but I love him dearly. Would not trade him for anything.
No, me either. Except, no, I can't go back to him for therapy because he's your stepdad.
Yes, you can.
I think he's going to therapy me.
Why?
I feel like there's not enough degrees of... Like, I'm going to walk in and he's going to be like, I already know your shit. I'm going to save you time.
He doesn't know quite a bit. But it's okay.
It's fine.
He would love to see you again.
I would also love to see him again. These are strange times indeed, Mrs. White.
Indeed, Miss Harris Steele. Mrs.
It does roll off the tongue. I got to tell you, one of my like top three things that I'm most excited about becoming betrothed.
Is
the name.
Yeah.
I get to do away with the hyphen.
You could just add a third name to the hyphen.
Ian, you know, he suggested that.
You just do it. I'm just like, and Jenny Harris Steele Vanstrom.
I signed up for some stupid like cash back coupon thing.
Okay.
And it like makes you enter your name. And it just really hurts my heart because I always go to enter my name and they go, enter a valid name. Like, my hyphen's not valid.
What a dick move.
I know. So many places do it. They don't allow for hyphens.
That's uncalled for.
I agree.
There are so many people with hyphened names.
I know. Do you know how many people don't know what the heck a hyphen is?
Like, they don't know where to find it on a keyboard?
No, no, no. I go, Harris hyphen Steele. And they go, how do you spell that?
I can't.
It's a little dash.
It's not a spelling. It's a punctuation.
God, it's painful.
It's the opposite.
Wake up, America.
Underscore.
It's a mid-level underscore.
That's what you should say next time. Jenny Harris mid-level underscore. It
just rolls off the tongue. It really does.
I bet they'd do it.
I bet. They'll be like, I know exactly what she's talking about. Oh my god.
Oh, wow.
Wow, these are like really privileged problems.
They are, indeed.
But that's okay. We're here to talk about...
conspiracies.
Conspiracies.
What a time for a conspiracy story.
It just feels right, doesn't it?
I was so close to doing an election conspiracy, and I could not make myself Google it.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't do an election conspiracy, but I did do a government conspiracy.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, it's my turn to go first.
It is.
All right. So I'm hyped because I am doing Jenny's most all-time favorite thing in the entire world, alien objections.
No.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm already very high strung, Taylor.
I know. I'm so sorry, but I knew exactly what I was doing.
I did.
I was like, I had like something else planned and it was just too tame.
Oh, because you know what we need to add to society right now? Spice. We need to spice it up a little bit.
You could add some cumin to that.
No. I don't even want pepper right now. Please and thank you.
Oh my gosh, I was feeling so frazzled yesterday, which was election day in our real world. And I stress eat. It is my biggest vice. I can't stop eating if I'm stressed. And I crave things that are like hefty and hearty. Please don't give me like a lettuce wrap. I will look at that and like cry and then please ask for a steak.
These are not times for leafy greens.
No, but I did go to Salsa Grill and I got a salad just because that's what I normally get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I never vary from the toppings ever. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Every time. And this time I looked at her and I was like, why don't you put some jalapenos on that?
Oh.
Why?
Ma'am.
Would I have done that to myself? And I said, just a few, just a sprinkling.
A smattering.
And this girl got her ladle out and went, scoop,
no,
plop. And
no,
I was
ma'am.
Like, that's not what I meant. But it's fine.
She's like, when you say a little, you mean a whole fucking scoop, right?
I was just like, okay. And then I got home and I forgot.
Oh,
because
sure.
I never do that.
Yeah.
And so I ate it and I was like, what is this? In this. And I was like, oh yeah, you idiot.
Jalapenos.
You asked for jalapenos. Raw, diced up jalapenos.
Mm-mm-mm.
Like a ding dong.
My body would not allow me to get that into my stomach. It's like, this is a vegetable that will kill you. So we're going to make it so you can't even swallow it. I cannot with the spicy.
Yeah. So I had that, an entire bag of tortilla chips, almost an entire thing of Oreos.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Halloween candy. Yeah, just a lot of food. I just ate for 4 hours straight.
That's fair. I drank 7 White Claws. We all cope in our own ways.
That probably would have been a little healthier, honestly.
Look, judging by how I felt this morning, no.
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 I did not feel great this morning either.
Okay.
I woke up and I was like, what have you done? you betrayed yourself.
Do you ever just sit yourself down and you're like, I'm so ashamed of you?
Yes. Yeah. That is how I felt. Like, even as I was going to bed, I must have said something really damaging. Because Ryan, like, he was, like, leaving. He didn't get any sleep at all. He left and I was, like, getting ready to put my phone down and, like, finally go to sleep. And he came in and he was like, I just wanted to clarify that you are always beautiful.
Oh,
I don't know what I said, but it must have been pretty
hurtful to yourself.
Hurtful to myself.
Oh, Ryan.
And he was like, I just really wanted to make that very clear before I left.
Oh, honey.
I know. I was very touched, but I also was like, man, I must have.
But like, you just stare at your ceiling and hate yourself.
I hurt my own feelings and then hurt my husband's feelings by hurting my own feelings. It was a lot of feelings.
What a chain reaction this was.
Yeah, absolutely.
What a time to be alive.
All right.
Do you know what would have made that better?
What?
If you got abducted by aliens?
Yeah, so I'm going to tell you about the story of Travis Walton.
Ooh. Is he an alien or is he the abductee?
He is the abductee.
Okay.
So, Travis is a... What? He's like a lumberjack, but he cuts down trees for a living. So think blue collar, think manly man, big bushy mustache.
Well, I'm thinking Yosemite Sam, and you can't stop me.
No, that's fine. He's okay. Just 22. Oh. Younger Yosemite Sam.
Okay.
So it's November 5th, 1975. So we just had the 45th anniversary of this event because this comes out in late November.
Uh-huh.
Travis Walton is 22, living in Snowflake, Arizona.
Cute!
I love it.
Wait, Arizona?
Yeah.
They ain't got no snow in Arizona.
They do not have snowflakes.
That's stupid.
So.
It's like Indiana Beach.
It's in Indiana. It's not a beach.
No, it's not. It's a cesspool is what it is.
Standing water.
I think they shut it down, honestly.
They shut down the, there was a theme park.
Yeah, Indian Beach.
Yeah.
We went there every summer as a kid. It's a miracle nobody died or got salmonella.
I went there with Abby and Allie's family quite a few times.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't remember feeling extremely safe there.
No, nor should you.
No. So I got quite the chuckle out of Snowflake, Arizona. And I was like, why? Why is it called this?
Somebody moved there from the Midwest and it's like,
Miss Snow. You know what this place could use? Some snow. Actually, no. The founders of the town were named William Flake and Aratus Snow.
Huh?
So they named it Snowflake. And the website, the town website is in Comic Sans.
What?
It's so tiny. It's little. The background of it looks like MySpace. So the background is snowflakes.
Oh, okay? Of course.
And then blue Comic Sans font.
Oh, it's cute.
Sweet, sweetheart.
Somebody at the age of 75 made that website.
Absolutely.
Love it.
No millennials in this town.
No, nay.
Zero. So Travis is a logger, and he was out at the National Forest with a crew of six other men on this balmy November day. Mike Rogers was the boss and the eldest of the group at 28.
Oh.
Yeah, so all of these guys are between 20 and 28.
Sweet babies.
Yeah. The rest of the crew is Alan Dalis, John Golett, Dwayne Smith, Kenneth Peterson, and Steve Pierce. The time finally came to call it a day, and all the men piled into the back of a pickup truck to head back to town. So it's one pickup truck, seven dudes.
Love that. I bet that's a smelly, smelly truck.
Yes. So I think three of them are in the front cab of the truck. So it's Mike... And I think Ken and then Travis were all in the front. And then the rest of the guys were smokers, so they were in the back.
Get in the back. Get in the back, bud.
The following is a condensed excerpt from Travis's book, Fire in the Sky, The Walton Experience. You can read quite a few of the condensed excerpts on Travis's website. So, would highly recommend.
Okay.
All right. Just then, sorry, that was so many mouth noises. People are going to immediately stop listening.
It was a pleasure to watch, though.
Oh, man. People do not like ASMR. I am convinced. Just then, my eye was caught by a light coming through the trees to the right, 100 yards ahead. I idly assumed that the glow was the sun going down in the west. Then it occurred to me that the sun had set a half an hour ago.
Ew.
Curious, I thought it might be the light of some hunters camped there, headlights, or maybe a fire. Some of the guys must have caught the sight too, because the men on the right side of the truck had fallen silent. As we continued driving up the road toward the brightness, we passed in sight of it for an instant. We barely got a glimpse through the gnarled branches before we rolled past the opening of the trees. Son of a, Alan started. What the hell is that? I asked. My eyes strained to make sense of the glimmering through the dense stand of trees blocking our vision. From my open window, I could see the yellowish brilliance washing through across our path into the road another 40 yards ahead. Intrigued, I was impatient to get past the intervening pines. From the driver's seat, I could not look up with the proper angle without leaning way over. He said, "What do you guys see?" he demanded curiously. Dwayne answered, "I don't know, but it looked like a crashed plane hanging in a tree." Finally, our growing excitement spurred Mike into ringing out what little speed the pickup could still achieve on the incline. We rolled past the intervening evergreen thicket to where we could have an obstructed view of the source of the strange radiance. Suddenly, we were electrified by the most awesome, incredible sight we had seen in our entire lives.
Yeah.
"Stop!" John cried out. "Stop the truck!" As the truck skidded to a dusty halt on the rocky road, I threw open the door for a clearer view of the dazzling light. "My God!" Alan yelled. "It's a flying saucer."
Oh my God.
It's quite the flowery.
It's like... It's a little YA.
Yes. Yeah. They thought it was about 8 feet tall and about 40 feet wide.
Oh, geez, Louise.
And again, how do we know how much feet are? I don't think I could look at like a 6 foot table and be like, yeah, that's 6 feet. I'd be like somewhere between 4 and 10.
You can sit 4 people at it comfortably.
Right, but I don't understand how people measure things with their eyeballs.
Like spatial awareness, I have none.
No, I don't either.
Yeah.
Do not understand. The craft was making a high-pitched buzzing sound, and Travis decided to get out of the truck to get a closer look at it, while all of his friends were like, "Bro, get back in the fucking truck!"
Yes.
They were, like, screaming at him, and he was big ding-dong and decided not to listen to them.
Well, you're gonna get snatched up, bud.
Yep. About that time, a greenish-blue beam of light came from the craft and hit Travis.
Oh, I hate the beams of light.
Yep. So sorry. Travis said, "I jumped for cover and then jumped to run back to the truck, and that's when the blast of energy hit me.
Ooh.
And I just felt this numbing shock go through my body. But the crew said it threw me in the air about 20 feet, and I landed in a way that they immediately were certain it had killed me. And they fled."
Oh, they dipped?
It's just goodbye.
No! No, what? What a bunch of dick friends.
I know. I literally, my next bullet is, his buddies in the truck dipped and said, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Yeah. They just were like, I'm out.
Well, I got to go clock out. I don't know what you want me to do.
Yeah. Sorry. So they got a little way down the road and then guilt took over.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, fuck, we should probably go back. We should go check it out, see what's going on. But when they returned, Travis was nowhere to be found. When Travis regained consciousness, he was on a table, what he thought was a hospital.
No, 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 no.
He immediately started to panic he didn't immediately panic because he thought he was in a normal place after being knocked out. He just thought, I got knocked out, my friends took me to the hospital. No big thing.
Oh, it's a big thing.
It's a big thing. But when he started to focus, he realized that he was surrounded by 3 short, balding beings.
Oh, no.
And that he realized that their faces were not human.
Middle-aged aliens?
He described them as looking like infants.
Oh, what? No.
I don't like it. I looked at the vague but reassuring forms of the doctors around me. Abruptly, my vision cleared. The sudden horror of what I saw rocked me as I realized I was definitely not in a hospital.
No.
I was looking square into the face of a horrible creature with huge, luminous brown eyes the size of quarters.
Oh.
I looked frantically around me, and there were 3 of them. Hysteria overcame me instantly. Yikes.
Mm.
So he tried to hit them. Like, he fought.
Sure.
And because they were so much smaller than him, they were afraid, so they ran away.
They like scurried.
Scurry! I like was picturing like Oompa Loompas. Yeah. Like, now that Travis was alone, he decided he's going to try to escape, but he really just ends up like going on a little adventure around the aircraft.
Oh, okay. He just wanders.
Yeah, he just wandered. Oh. Bebopped around.
Okay.
He encounters another human wearing a glass helmet and a blue velvet uniform. So I looked at some of the illustrations of this, like what Travis described was like in illustration form. And it's like the glass bubble. Like it's the glass bubble helmet that like you think of is like the space. Jetsons. Like space.
Oh.
I connect with me until I saw it.
I was saying like space suit.
Yeah. I was thinking... Like, space janitor. Like, what? A helmet. Not like a glass bubble. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
Cool.
My brain is weird.
Okay. I like the way you perceive things.
Thanks. When I saw the glass, like goldfish jar on top of somebody's head, I was like, wait. Cartoony.
Okay.
He encounters another human wearing a glass helmet and blue velvet uniform. He takes Travis into another room where three more humans are waiting for him.
Oh.
They were all dressed in the same, like the same as the first man, but they did not have the helmets on. He describes all of these people as being perfect human specimens. So there were three men and one woman, and they were like the perfect embodiment of what we think gorgeous humans look like.
Oh,
so
okay.
Muscular, very fit. He described the woman as like the idealistic woman shape.
Conventionally attractive.
Yes. He said that they all looked like they could have been related. Like they were all blonde. They all looked very similar in that way, but none of them spoke to him.
Oh.
And so this whole encounter, there's not any kind of like telepathic communication. He was like asking questions, trying to figure stuff out, and none of these beings could communicate with him.
Oh.
So that's definitely strange.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, they put him on another table and put a gas mask over his nose and mouth, and he loses consciousness, and the next thing he knows, he is waking up in Heber, Arizona.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Not where they left him.
Nope.
Okay. They always do that.
Yeah, just like close enough.
Put them freaking back exactly where you found them.
Yeah. It's disrespectful.
Honestly.
There's more that happens. Like he ends up going and like sitting in this chair in a room with a lever and like he pulls the lever. He's like toying around with shit. He's playing.
What?
With stuff. I'm like, don't touch shit.
No, don't pull levers. You don't know what they do.
No. And all I could hear in my head was pull the lever. Wrong.
Wrong lever.
he's playing with stuff. He's do-dotting around.
He's being a 22-year-old on a spaceship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Probably not a smart adventure, but hey.
Well, an adventure nonetheless.
Yeah. So then he runs into this other man and gets taken and put back kind of almost where he was taken in Heber, Arizona. Back on Earth, while Travis is in the spaceship, while he was having all of his alien rendezvous. Rendezvous.
The French don't believe in S's.
Oh. Okay, that makes sense. The six coworkers had gone back to try and find Travis, but he was MIA. So they called the police and told him what happened. Of course, the police were like, that's not what happened. But they said that if these guys were acting, they were extremely good at it.
Oh.
And they were freaking scared. Legitimately out of their minds. Terrified.
These mountain men were scared.
Yeah, out of what they saw.
Okay.
Two of them were crying. Could not hold it together.
Whoa. I love when men cry.
I don't. It makes me feel a lot of emotions that I don't know how to deal with.
Okay.
Not saying that men should not cry. I fully empower that. It makes me feel like I should comfort them, and it also makes me feel like now I'm in charge and like I have to like handle the situation. I don't know. There's a lot of emotions that happen. Not saying that they are great or the correct emotions to have. They are just my emotions. Sorry.
Only you try to micromanage your emotions into being correct or not.
So you can just have emotions. I'll bring that up in therapy next week.
Okay. Note it.
Note it down. Okay. Of course, police were skeptical, blah, 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 high-end stress happening. So, yeah, you think that your friend is dead, but there's no body. You see a spaceship. It's a night. Everybody's freaking out. Of course.
Mm-hmm.
So the police asked them to take a polygraph.
Okay.
And they do. And one of them was inconclusive because he was so stressed. Couldn't stop crying. Nothing like that could make this polygraph happen. The other five came back passing. So, they saw something.
They actually saw a dang old spaceship.
Yep.
Or something that their brains thought was a spaceship.
Yep, absolutely. At this point, they are suspecting the crew of foul play. They think that they killed Travis and hid his body in the woods.
Oh my God.
Right. They got dogs out there. They did a search and rescue mission and couldn't find him. Obviously. Like, he was not there.
Oh my God. What?
Yeah. Travis Walton is declared missing and 5 days go by. Travis came to just outside of a gas station in the next town over in Heber 5 days after his
disappearance.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yep.
Ew, Taylor, no.
So as he's waking up, he remembers seeing a light and a craft speed up into the sky just as he was getting his wits about him. And he remembered very clearly what had happened to him. There was no period of time that he was confused or like events were out of order or anything like that. He remembered exactly what happened.
They didn't even anesthetize him?
No.
Ew, no common decency, these balding babies.
No. So yeah, he's just like, okay. And he wakes up, he knows who he is, he knows that he's not where he's supposed to be, he knows he's got to call his family. Like, there was no confusion at all. He was able to stumble his way to a payphone and call his brother-in-law to come get him, and his brother-in-law thought it was a prank. He was like, okay, like, whatever. And so he ends up going to his, I think, Travis's, like, mom, and they then go get him together. And he is at this payphone like he said he was, and he is a friggin' mess. Like, he's crying, he's scared, he is, like, telling them what happened. And the guys are like, you need to calm down, like, we're gonna take care of you. Are you hurt? Did they hurt you? And he's fine. Like, physically, he's fine. But mentally, obviously not.
Very unfine.
Yeah. They did drug tests. And it showed that Travis was not under the influence of drugs or alcohol. And he did not have any other injuries other than a small red dot in the crook of his elbow where it looked like a needle may have been injected.
No, no, no.
But nothing in his body shows that he had that.
Fuck.
And the way that his brother, like, told him when he, like, got in the car to go home, he was like, I feel like, oh, he said something about, like, time passing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I must have only been gone for a couple of hours. And he said, feel your face. And he felt his face and his beard had grown out. And he was like, I just shaved this morning. And he's like, bro, you've been gone for 5 days. And that's when he really freaked out.
Oh my God.
Yeah. To this day, he and his crew maintain their stories. Nobody has wavered in this story.
Oh my God.
100% believe Travis was taken by aliens. There was a game show called The Moment of Truth that Travis appeared on, and they also gave a polygraph. And this is the only polygraph out of six that Travis has ever failed.
Oh.
I think that this is, like, game show BS. Like, yeah. Of course you're appearing on a game show. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think that that was administered by, like,
professional.
Polygraphist or whatever they call them.
Polygraphist?
Yeah.
I don't think that's what it is.
Well, that's what they are now.
Okay.
Polygraphist. About 15 years later, it was discovered that the trees closest to where the abduction took place, that the trees were producing wood fiber at a rate 36 times faster than they did for the 85 years before that.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. And there's pictures of it.
No.
Yeah.
Ooh, wait. Oh, now I got goosebumps.
Yeah.
Okay.
A complete core sampling revealed that the thickened growth was only on the side of the trees that the craft would have been.
Oh.
Yeah.
No.
Travis wrote a book about his experiences in 1978 called The Fire in the Sky, The Walton Experience. And Paramount Pictures made a movie entitled Fire in the Sky in 1993.
Oh.
But Travis has watched the movie and he said that while there are certain things that are accurate, Hollywood took a lot of liberties.
As
and,
they do.
Yeah, he wants to recreate the movie and have it done like more closely to the book. According to Wikipedia, he was in talks with Ryan Murphy.
What?
To get this done. So we might get a movie here in the future.
That would be incredible.
Yeah. And Travis is still alive. He still does a lot of interviews. He actually has his own, I don't want to call it a comic. It's a convention in Arizona called Fire in the Sky Convention. And he signs his book and he talks. And it's a bunch of like ufologists and people who believe. Who go. And there are, of course, a lot of skeptics that think that he is making the whole thing up. He, his mom, and his brother were all kind of into UFOs and stuff like that. And I think that that's a pretty strong trend in people who claim to be abducted, that they are doing the research and stuff like that. But I just think that means, like, aliens are like, we want to pick that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to want to pick the one that knows things and, like, is curious.
Or sure. Because so. They're going to... Yeah, I don't... Yeah, my eyes are watering. I hate these. They no. give me such ooky spooky.
So that is the Travis Walton abduction.
I need a drink of water.
Got a little stressy over there.
A little stressed out, isn't it?
Where is this coming from?
I don't know. I can't stop doing it, though. I, like, did it one too many times, and it's accidentally becoming a habit.
I'm not mad about it.
Morning. Cup of murder.
Ever wonder what terrible thing happened on this day in true crime history? My name is Karina Beemisterfer, writer and host of Morning Cup of Murder, your daily true crime podcast that dives into what murder took place on today's date in history. With over 500 episodes about serial killers, murderers, cults, and cold cases, there is always something new for you to enjoy. Morning Cup of Murder is the perfect addition to your morning routine. So, if you like your coffee hot but your bones chilled, start your day with a Morning Cup of Murder. Subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you listen, and come say hi on social media at Morning Cup of Murder. Oh, and remember, stay safe.
Okay, now that my mouth isn't crusty from anxiety, I would love to tell you about my conspiracy theory.
Okay, I would love that too.
Well,
I'm glad that we're here.
Well, good, because that's what I'm going to do.
Fantastic.
But I would like to preface this by saying this is a conspiracy theory filled with facts.
Oh.
And it might be a little unfair to call it a conspiracy theory because this turned out to be true.
My stomach just like got so knotted.
As you should. It is about some pretty whack things that the government pulled.
Okay.
That people were spectacle. People wore spectacles about it. And they were right.
Great. Fantastic.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. I also, Wikipedia and history.com article about this government program that I will not name just yet.
Okay. My sources were mostly TravisWalton.com.
Okay. That seems like a valid source.
So, and his book. The end.
I love that. Okay. In the 50s and 60s, at the height of the Cold War, the United States government feared the Soviet, Chinese, and North Korean agents were using mind control to brainwash U.S. prisoners of war in Korea. In 1953, Alan Dulles, director of the CIA, responded by approving a covert operation aimed to develop techniques that could be used against Soviet enemies to control human behavior with drugs and other psychological manipulators. The program involved more than 150 human experiments involving psychedelic drugs, paralytics, and electroshock therapy. Sometimes the test subjects knew they were participating in a study, but at other times, they had no idea, even when the hallucinogens started taking effect.
Oh, no.
Many of the tests were conducted at universities, hospitals, or prisons in the United States and Canada. Most of these took place between 1953 and 1964, but it's not clear how many people were involved in the tests. The agent kept notoriously poor records and destroyed most of the project documents when the program was officially halted in 1973. The name of that program is MKUltra.
Oh, no. I know the name MKUltra. Like, I know that that is something, and I can associate it with, like, Cold War in Russia.
Yep.
Don't think I 100% know anything else other than that. So I am hype for you to tell me all the things, and you're going to get the phone call at 2 a.m. when I'm scared.
Okay. That's okay. It gets really nefarious. So I apologize in advance.
Okay.
So the CIA began to experiment with lysergic acid diethylamide, which is LSD.
Okay.
Under the direction of agency chemist and poison expert. Like, what a freaking job title.
Bet she was a woman.
Sidney Gottlieb, but it was a boy.
Dang it.
I know. He believed the agency could harness the drug's mind-altering properties for brainwashing or psychological torture. The scope of Project MKUltra was broad, with research undertaken at more than 80 institutions, including, like I said, colleges, universities, hospitals, and freaking prisons, and pharmaceutical companies.
Oh, okay.
The CIA operated using front organizations, although sometimes top officials at these institutions were not aware of the CIA's involvement.
All right.
Under the code name of Project MKUltra, the CIA began to fund studies at Columbia University, Stanford University, and other colleges on the effects of the drug. After a series of tests, the drug was deemed too unpredictable for use in counterintelligence. MKUltra also included experiments with MDMA, otherwise known as ecstasy or Molly, mm-hmm. mescaline, heroin, barbiturates, methamphetamine, psilocybin, which are magic mushrooms, and DMT. You know what DMT is? It is, I don't know the chemical name for it, but it is the chemical that your brain secretes that makes you dream.
Oh!
Yeah.
That sounds extra scary.
I will be doing an episode of DMT.
Okay.
Because it is amazing. I just don't know what category it falls into yet.
Okay.
Anyway, at the invitation of Stanford psychology graduate student Vic Lavelle, Ken Kesey volunteered to take part in what turned out to be a CIA-financed study under the aegis of MKUltra at the Menlo Park Veterans Hospital, where he worked as a night aide. The project studied all of the effects of these drugs on people, but in this case, it was LSD. The Office of Security used LSD in interrogations, but Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, the chemist who directed MKUltra, had other ideas. He thought it could be used in covert operations since its effects were temporary. He believed it could be given to high-ranking officials and in the way affect the course of important meetings, speeches, etc. Since he realized there was a difference in testing the drug in a laboratory and using it in clandestine operations, he initiated a series of experiments where LSD was given to people in normal settings without warning.
Mm.
At first, everyone in technical services tried it. A typical experiment involved two people in a room where they observed each other for hours and took notes. As the experimentation progressed, a point arrived where outsiders were drugged with no explanation whatsoever, and surprise acid trips became something of an occupational hazard among CIA operatives.
Huh. No!
Yes. Yes.
Surprise acid trips?
Your boss will just, like, put a little, like, bloop bloop in your coffee.
And wait.
And then
popcorn.
Yeah. And then you start tripping.
I would be so scared. Mm. Why? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. I mean, can they still be expected to do their job?
I mean, their job is to study the effects of it. They just didn't know that they're going to be, like, the test subjects.
I feel like you need to sign a waiver.
Oh, well, it would. If you signed a waiver, it wouldn't be, like, a super great covert operation.
That's true.
But I like where your head is at.
Limit the liability here, friends.
Limit the liability, friends. Adverse reactions often occurred, such as an operative who received the drug in his morning coffee became psychotic and ran across Washington, seeing a monster in every car passing him.
Absolutely not.
The experiments continued even after the Frank Olson incident, which I will cover in just a second.
Okay.
Some subjects' participation was consensual, and in these cases, they appeared to be singled out for even more extreme experiments. In one case, 7 volunteers in Kentucky were given LSD for 77 consecutive days.
Did they ever recover?
I don't know. I mean, well, there's a chance that if you drop acid once, if you have any kind of, like, predetermined, like, possibility condition of a mental condition, like, you can lose your marbles so quick.
Like, your brain has to be a solid, non, like, shakeable.
Mm-hmm. And an immovable force, your mental health.
That is not us.
That force is very movable, yeah, for me.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah, like that workout thing that's like, it looks like a bouncy ball underneath, but then on the top, it's like you stand on it.
Oh my god, yeah. For like your abs, yeah, and balance.
That's my mental state. Very wobbly.
Mine is, my mental state is more of like an old person on a hoverboard who like can't get their balance.
Wobbly at best.
Yeah, at best. Another technique investigated was the intravenous administration of a barbiturate into one arm and then methamphetamine into the other.
I am uncomfortable. My skin is crawling.
It's about to get worse.
Oh, God. Okay.
The barbiturates were released into the person first, and as soon as the person began to fall asleep, they immediately injected the methamphetamine.
What?
And the person would begin babbling incoherently, and it was sometimes possible to ask questions and get useful answers, like a truth serum. It like puts your brain to sleep because of the barbiturates, but the methamphetamine like keeps you awake. So like in areas
if I have too much caffeine and then try to take a Tylenol PM, my body revolts.
Yeah, same. Like if I take one too many like melatonin gummy bears, like I might trip.
I accidentally tripped on NyQuil once.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I took 4. Forgot that I took 2. Oh, and yeah. I took another 4. Or another 2. And then I like woke up and the room was like very spinny and swirly.
We are at the age where like...
I was 21 and I was very scared.
Oh, see, I'm almost... I turned 30 in like 2 weeks. And I can't do NyQuil. I need a babysitter for NyQuil. That's how old I am.
I have a friend. I will leave her unnamed for the purposes of this story. But she was moving out of her house and moving into her, like, adulthood home.
Uh-huh.
And she was packing up her medicine, and there was a note from her mom on the NyQuil that says, "Don't you think you've had enough?"
Oh, my God! Yeah. Don't you think you've had enough? How much NyQuil did she have?
No, I think she was just like taking it to go to sleep most nights.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
Don't you think you've had enough?
Don't you think you've had enough NyQuil? In areas under American control in the early 1950s in Europe and East Asia, mostly Japan, Germany, and the Philippines, the CIA created secret detention centers so that the U.S. could avoid criminal prosecution. The CIA captured people suspected of being enemy agents and other people it deemed, quote-unquote, expendable to undertake various types of torture and human experimentation on them. The prisoners were interrogated while being administered psychoactive drugs, electroshocked, and subjected to extremes of temperature, sensory isolation, and similar situations to develop a better understanding of how to destroy and control human minds. And then we have Operation Midnight Climax.
I do not like it.
I also
This does not sound fun.
I hate the word climax.
It does not sound like a fun romance novel.
It's not.
Like it should be.
Operation Midnight Climax. It's like a Navy SEAL falls in love with like Osama bin Laden and they like run into the hills.
Oh, that's not how I was going to go with it, but that's a close rendition.
It reminds me of what Zero Dark Thirty, the operation where they apprehended.
Yeah.
Okay. Operation Midnight Climax. This is an MK Ultra project, like subset project of the umbrella of MK Ultra.
Okay.
In which the government employed sex workers who lured unsuspecting men to CIA quote unquote safe houses where drug experiments took place. The CIA would unknowingly dose the men with LSD and then, while at times drinking cocktails behind a two-way mirror, watch the drug's effects on the men's behavior. Recording devices were installed in the sex workers' rooms disguised as electrical outlets.
No.
Very.
No, no.
Oh, just a whole mess of problematic themes there. Most of the Operation Midnight Climax experiments took place in San Francisco and in Marin County, California, and in New York City. The program had very little oversight and supervision, and the CIA agents involved admitted that there was a freewheeling, party-like atmosphere that prevailed.
Well, yeah, everybody's tripping.
Yeah, well, the CIA are sitting behind two-way mirrors watching these men that they just dosed, who the, like, government-employed sex workers lured to a hotel for the sheer point of the CIA giving them LSD. Just to see what would happen.
Who wrote the script?
Mm.
Who did?
Bring the original writers back. An agent named George White wrote to Gottlieb in 1971. Of course, I was a very minor missionary, actually a heretic, but I toiled wholeheartedly in the vineyards because it was fun, fun, fun.
Oh.
Where else could a red-blooded American boy lie, kill, and cheat, steal, deceive, rape, and pillage with the sanction and blessing of the all-highest government?
That's disgusting.
It's absolutely foul.
I am... There's not a word.
Mm-mm. No.
Okay. Great.
Okay, so here's some willing and also unwilling participants who may or may not have gotten really dead by this project.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Okay, okay.
So, Ken Kesey, I mentioned him earlier, yes. Author of 1962 novel One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, volunteered for MK Ultra experiments with LSD while he was a college student at Stanford University. Kesey later went on to promote the drug, hosting LSD-fueled parties that he called acid tests. Acid tests combine drug use with musical performances by bands including the Grateful Dead and the psychedelic effects such as fluorescent paint and black lights. These parties influenced the early development of hippie culture and kickstarted the 1960s psychedelic drug scene. Other notable people who reportedly volunteered for the CIA-backed experiments with LSD include Robert Hunter, the Grateful Dead lyricist, Ted Kaczynski, better known as the Unabomber, and James Joseph Bulger, the notorious Boston mobster with an extra gross nickname of Whitey. Frank Olson was a scientist who worked for the CIA. At a 1953 CIA retreat, Olson drank a cocktail that had been secretly spiked with LSD.
Surprise.
Surprise. A few days later, on November 28th, 1953, Olson tumbled to his death from the window of a New York City hotel room in an alleged suicide after a severe mental break.
Oh, man. So he was wibbly-wobbly.
He was wibbly-wobbly, and then he, like, didn't know what happened to him. The family of Frank Olson decided to have a second autopsy performed in 1994.
Oh.
A forensics team found injuries on the body that had likely occurred before the fall. The findings sparked conspiracy theories that Olson might have been assassinated by the CIA. After prolonged legal proceedings, Olson's family was awarded a settlement of $750,000 and received a personal apology from President Gerald Ford and the then CIA director, William Colby.
So he was for sure assassinated.
Well, they paid him out so the family wouldn't make a stink. So, take that.
So there was something to uncover.
There was something to uncover for them to write a check and get an apology from the president.
$750,000.
Correct. Okay, so the whistleblower and the cover-up.
Okay.
Which dibs on that band name.
Okay, the next time we start a band, I will let you have it for sure.
Thank you, thank you. It's yours. In 1974, New York Times journalist Seymour Hersh published a story about how the CIA had conducted non-consensual drug experiments and illegal spying operations on U.S. citizens.
Consent is important.
Consent is freaking important.
Consent be just like a thing that people do?
It should be the number one thing before you do anything with another human. I feel like it's very simple. So, his report started the lengthy process of bringing long-suppressed details about MKUltra to light. The following year, President Ford, in the wake of the Watergate scandal and amid growing distrust of the U.S. government, set up the United States President's Commission on CIA Activities within the United States to investigate illegal CIA activities.
Wow. Okay.
Quite a name for a committee.
Yes.
Including Project MKUltra and other experiments on unsuspecting citizens. The commission was led by Vice President Nelson Rockefeller and is commonly referred to as the Rockefeller Commission.
All right.
The Church Committee, helmed by Idaho Democratic Senator Frank Church, was a larger investigation into the abuses of the CIA, FBI, and other U.S. intelligence agencies during and after the resignation of President Richard M. Nixon. The Church Committee delved into plots to assassinate foreign leaders, including the Cuban dictator Fidel Castro and the Congolese independence leader Patrice Lumumba. It also uncovered thousands of documents relating to MKUltra. These revelations resulted in Ford's 1976 executive order on intelligence activities that prohibited, quote, experimentation with drugs on human suspects except with the informed consent in writing and witnessed by a disinterested party of each such human subject. Many of MKUltra's records were destroyed in a 1973 purge.
What?
Mm-hmm. Because...
just, like, gone.
They burnt them all because they didn't want this committee to find out what the heck they did to all these people, so they tried to burn them.
Good grief.
But 8,000 pages of records, which were mostly financial documents, were mistakenly not destroyed.
Oh.
And they were found in 1977, launching a second round of inquiries into MKUltra. Although the renewed inquiry resulted in public interest and even two lawsuits, the 1977 documents still leave an incomplete record of the program, and nobody ever answered for MKUltra. Two lawsuits related to the program reached the Supreme Court in the late 1980s, but both protected the government over citizens' rights.
Of course.
And that is the conspiracy theory of MKUltra that was confirmed, and then still nobody did shit about it.
And we still don't have all the facts.
We still don't have all the facts because they destroyed all of the documents.
Those documents. Wow. That is wild.
Mm-hmm. So don't ever think that the government is not up to some conniving, shady shit.
Oh.
Because if they were pulling this in the summer of love,
mm-hmm.
imagine what they are up to right now.
On the eve of our civil war.
On the eve of our... well, in real time. What day is it in real time? What day does this come out?
It's the 20th.
It's my birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday!
Thank you. We know who the president is, I hope. We just don't know in real time.
Someday we'll know.
We'll know.
Hopefully before your birthday.
I just want to, like, not correlate the two of those things.
Yeah.
I'm really trying to, like, really hard to pretend that my birthday isn't happening this year. So, like, don't text me, don't call me, don't say anything.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to continue to be 29 for another year until everything dies down, and then I'll turn 31.
Oh, we're just going to skip
30. We're skipping 30.
Okay.
So.
All right. Happy void day.
Thank you! that is... Now that's a day I would really like to celebrate.
All right. Done.
Happy day of emerging from the void.
Yay! You human!
Yay!
Yay.
Anyway, I hope you guys are having a wonderful day.
Yes.
Whatever you're out doing in the world.
Happy Friday.
Follow us on the social meds.
Yes. If you want to send us a conspiracy, an ookie spooky story, a true crime story that you know about, maybe one that happened to you or in your town.
A crime you committed.
Yeah, go ahead and tell us that too. We're dying to know. You can do that, and you can DM us at any of the social medias, or you can send us an email. That would be great too, at alittlebitgram@gmail.com.
We love you a lot.
We love you.
Thanks for listening.
To each other, and thanks for listening.
Goodbye.